The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, Champions League. It's caveat emptor at Leverkusen as Man United come to town. Chelsea have problems with Basel, and at the Emirates, Flamini's jersey may be armless, but Arsenal certainly weren't. We round up all the Champions League news. Bayern's 10th straight win, Real Madrid in 10, and start drooling over the weekend that's on the way. Featuring Chelsea Saints, West Ham Fulham, and Andre Villas-Boas in crisis, Moyes not in crisis, Man United's trip to Tottenham. All of that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, James Richardson.
Hello, James Horncastle.
Hello, James Richardson.
This is getting a bit Partridge-esque. In for a penny. Hello, Ian McIntosh.
Hello, James Horncastle.
Good.
Oh.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Did you enjoy the midweek Champions League fun and games?
It was. It was very exciting.
Some momentous games in there. A lot of goals as well.
A lot of drama. A lot of permutations as well.
Oh, really?
Mathematical number crunching.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping by this point things would be getting a bit
they
clearer.
Have.
Yeah. They have.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so. One thing is clear, James, is that Man United are through and undefeated in 11. And boom, David Moyes is the answer.
Yeah, that Champions League, he's found his feet there quite quickly.
Yeah, how did this happen? Because they went there. Bayer Leverkusen had a good home record. Man United, bit of a wobble at the weekend. No Carrick, no Fellaini. So how were they able to turn in this performance?
No Van Persie. No, they were impressive. I think of the performances that United have given under Moyes, it was perhaps one of those most reminiscent of Ferguson's team. I think in terms of how just quick, precise, good on the counter-attack they were. I thought Giggs was excellent. He was, you know, if Zlatan has a verb, he was pillowing it around at some time. I thought his assist for, I think, Nani, was it? The golf shot chip was pretty exceptional. And Rooney as well was marvellous. But I think, you know, I mean, Bayer Leverkusen have made United look good so far this season. I think prior to this game, you'd probably say that one of United's best performances was the home leg, if you can call it that, at Old Trafford against them. So, you know, how much do you read into it? But there was obviously some momentum there with United.
I mean, right. It wasn't that they clicked into Kagawa coming into the side. How much impact did that have?
Oh, Kagawa was amazing. I mean, unsurprisingly, given that he was finally in his preferred position. But the funny thing about this game was that for the first 10 minutes, it just looked like standard Manchester United. They couldn't string anything together in the middle. In fact, it wasn't until 30 seconds after I'd tweeted about the poor standard of Manchester United's midfield that they suddenly created a gorgeous goal and went on to thump Bayer Leverkusen without even a smidge of mercy. But Kagawa was wonderful. His movement and the little flicks, his intelligence, his intuitive grasp of the game. I mean, the man could run a mile on bubble wrap and never make a sound. He's such a gorgeous player to watch. And this was finally him at, you know, in the position where he should be, at the level where he should be. It was quite pleasing to watch.
We're all just taking it. You had us at bubble wrap. What did you say after that? 'Cause you completely zoned out. Pete Daddy's got an important message about Bayer Leverkusen regarding that Son of Sam business from Monday. He says, if they actually went out and bought the Albanian defensive midfielder Andy Lila, they could have Samson Andy Lila, which would be amazing in terms of a team sheet, Jacob. Is this the start of a whole new chapter for Man United, or are they going to go to Spurs this weekend and revert to type?
Well, I think Moyes was instantly looking forward and trying to see that as a turning point of the season, which is probably very sensible. As James said, Bayer Leverkusen were not in particularly good form. So there is a certain amount of doubt. Well, was it Manchester United who were brilliant, and was it Leverkusen who were absolutely awful? But these are the kind of performances and the kind of matches that can fill a team with confidence and just give them that belief that actually everything's going to be okay, which in fairness they seem to have had largely since that comeback against Stoke. That seemed to have been the rock bottom when they were 2-0 down there. So, and certainly, given the way Tottenham were looking last weekend, I think I'll probably back United for this one.
Well, it was the biggest ever win by an English team in Germany. And, of course, Spurs
in the papers midweek, not because of any Champions League action, but rather for all the crisis now engulfing Andre Villas-Boas, Jacob.
I wouldn't say it's a crisis. It's only November, but they have spent something like £110 million and they're not very good at the moment.
Right.
He doesn't seem to know his best team, Andre Villas-Boas, and they're not playing very good football. It's all a bit slow. You can understand why the fans are a bit bored watching it. I've been bored watching Spurs a few times this season. They haven't been able to find a way past any team that has come and sat back, which you might not expect United to do, I guess, on Sunday. I guess it's not exactly the way they play. They do like to come out and attack, so there might be a bit more space for Spurs, but it is all a bit of a mess at the moment. It was a mess on obviously on Sunday against City, lost 6-0, but just the way the team was set up was misguided probably. And but at the same time, it's only November and he's been in the job not so long. You have to give managers a bit of time, I guess.
You reckon? 2 points off the top four they are. Great stat. They, excluding a penalty, they failed to score with any of their last 78 shots in the Premier League.
A lot of those are coming from outside the box, though, and that's part of the problem, because they're not creating sort of clear-cut chances within 18 yards. So, you know, I think that's probably one of the issues. And also, a lot of these players I've never played in the Premier League before. A lot of the players have come in, basically. So there is going to be a period of adaptation. However, I think...
Assimilation.
One of the things that was noticeable in summer, when we were all very excited about Tottenham, was with these players they were signing, was this certain element of, why haven't these players gone to maybe bigger clubs? Because Eriksen's been around for a long time. Why did nobody like Manchester United, Arsenal, Barcelona, whoever else you want to say, go for Christian Eriksen? Why has he ended up at Tottenham? It's probably because he's a little bit flaky still. Same with Paulinho.
He wasn't the problem of the last week.
No, he wasn't the problem. But why have these players ended up at Spurs? Maybe they were bigged up a little bit too much.
Right. If Spurs are having a goal-scoring crisis, and it does rather seem they are, is sending Jermaine Defoe to the MLS the answer?
The MLS seem to be throwing quite a lot of big contracts around because, as you know, Jimbo, they've been after players like Quagliarella, Gilardino.
Have they not? It's Gilardino. Is that seemed to be given the green light this week?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure whether they have an agreement and nothing signed or vice versa. But yeah, I've been quite surprised that Tifo hasn't perhaps got the look in that he maybe merits, because he does make runs that Roberto Soldado doesn't seem capable of running at making at the moment.
He does make runs.
Yeah, he makes runs.
Defoe's never had the greatest record as a lone striker. I mean, Soldado's not exactly setting the heather alight at the moment, but it seems that Villas-Boas doesn't really trust him in that system. But, I mean, Villas-Boas, he deserves criticism for what's happening, because obviously a lot of money's been spent. That team is a lot better than they're playing, and they're barely scoring. But to talk of the sack is a little premature. I think we're forgetting that when you drop that many new players into a squad, they need time, just as people, to settle into new surroundings, to settle around with, to figure out how their teammates work, to find out what runs to make. That kind of thing just doesn't happen overnight. It's not a computer game. I think there's been far too much expected. The most worrying aspect of the story was the line that the boardroom had expected a title challenge. Now, this is on the back of £107 million worth of spending, as Jacob said, on players that, you know, you wouldn't automatically assume are title-winning players. You know, Chelsea spent, I think, £120 million in their first season, came second, and that was 10 years ago. Manchester City spent hundreds of millions. It took them 4 years to win the title. Liverpool spent £100 million and that didn't win them the title. So where have Tottenham got the idea that £107 million is enough?
Although they spent £107 million, they also got £86 million
in. They're exactly.
They're not on the same level as City or Chelsea. And they also, although they got £86 million in, they have not got a guy who was scoring 30-yard screamers basically every week last season, scoring last-minute winners and every type of goal imaginable. And okay, you take out him and you put in a load of five new players, but none of them are as good as him.
I think the disappointment has been Lamella and how long it's taken him to find his feet, because he's their record transfer signing. I think of the players who were there to replace Bale, he was the one who was slated for that role and slated to score the kind of goals that Bale had scored. He scored 15 goals in Serie A last season and he hasn't.
Right, but there are problems at the other end as well, problems that Villas-Boas presumably does bear some responsibility for. For example, the fact that he insists on playing this high line, which was absolutely catastrophic at the Etihad, when Kabul and Dawson don't seem in any way capable of dealing with the effects of that.
Well, it's very strange because I think he wanted to offload Dawson when he got there, specifically because he didn't think that he could play with the high line, at a point that he seemed single-handedly trying to prove on Sunday. Kabul, I think, is the kind of player who can. But this is the reason Villas-Boas deserves criticism, because tactics are supposed to be his strong suit, and yet there was a game, I think, against Newcastle where Brad Friedel was in goal, and pretty much every human being watching the game said, well, they can't play the high line because Brad Friedel's about 60, and he did, and they lost. So it's kind of surprising, and he does need to have a rethink. It's at the other end as well, the congestion, as the wide players cut inside and everyone just starts larruping things into the upper tier.
But so that game aside, their defence is been very good, right?
Well, apart from that and the West Ham,
West Ham game where again they were made to look shocking, made to look very slow in that game. But they do have a slow defence,
right? Yeah, but if you bring up the Newcastle game as well, that's probably one of their best.
A Man United going to make them look slow and indeed donkey-esque.
Well, the speed of their counter-attacking against Leverkusen, there's every chance. The first goal in particular, the pace with which they moved the ball up through Kagawa, Giggs, Rooney, and then tossed it in for Valencia was absolutely outstanding. It's the best goal I've seen them score in ages. Best team goal I've seen them score in ages. So I would be a little bit concerned.
Mm. Well, here's two other facts to concern you if you're a Spurs fan. Man United are unbeaten at White Hart Lane since 2001, and Spurs must go to the Arctic Circle on Thursday evening to face Tromso. That's not going to help, is it? We can't really discuss that because, you know, by the time you hear this, listener, they've probably been there and indeed done that. But Michael Laudrup down to 3-1 for next Spurs manager. If they lose badly, do you think this is going to start taking shape?
I would be surprised, given what Daniel Levy can be like.
Right. But
who knows?
All right. Well, meantime, Man City beat Pilsen 4-2. But dearie me, what was happening there when it went to 2-2? That was unexpected, wasn't it, Jacob?
Yeah, you wouldn't expect City to have conceded two goals at home to Victoria Pilsen, but they can be a little bit dodgy at the back, Manchester City. But at least Joe Hart had a blemish-free evening.
Right. Yeah. Because he wasn't at fault for the two goals.
No. But they got the win in the end, and they could maybe still win the group, although they won't because
They're going to be away at Bayern Munich next. Yeah. And I don't know if you've heard about their away record. It's not as good as their home record, Manchester City. Yeah. Bayern Munich, by contrast, have an absolutely terrific record wherever they play. They've won 10 straight Champions League games, the first club ever to do that. Now, in the immediate future, Man City will be at home to Swansea this weekend. They've scored 13 goals without reply in their last two home games. Indeed, over the whole season, they've scored 28 at home, conceded just two. Wow, Sergio Aguero's got 12 goals in his last nine games in all competitions for City. It says Manchester City, doesn't it, James?
Yes.
It certainly does. Good. Chelsea, Jacob.
Yes.
Dearie me.
I know.
Two wins in their last five games,
can't
Chelsea.
Beat Basel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what they said on Marco Estrella was interviewed before the game and said it is Basel because we never know what the pronunciation is.
Right.
Yeah. So I was glad to learn that properly. Yeah.
Basel.
Baal, you know, all these various.
At least you didn't have Gabriel Marcotti shouting at you on Twitter for getting the spelling wrong.
Yeah.
It's like some avenging angel with spell check.
Right. Mohamed Salah, lots of love for him.
He's a great player. Great. Because, well, the first time we saw him was against, probably anyone saw him in this country, was against Spurs last season in the Europa League at White Hart Lane when he tore them apart over and over again, playing on the right, I think. And then his goal on Tuesday night was on the left and again outpaced Ivanovic. And you can see Ivanovic straining his face, to get back. And then
which farmyard animal are you going to employ to describe Chelsea's bat line then? because they look sluggish as well, don't they?
They did. But Mourinho said afterwards that they were tired, which was understandable because they had a very hard game on the weekend.
Mm. All right. Well, they have a tough game coming up this weekend because they, in third place, are hosting the side now in fifth, Southampton, who are coming off a 2-0 defeat away at Arsenal the previous round.
But they were good.
They were Boric aside, they looked competitive in that game.
They were. They didn't create a lot, though. I think that was partly down to how good Arsenal are at the moment at protecting their defence and how well the defence is playing. Southampton, they did sort of get to about the 30 yards away from Arsenal's goal, and then they were shut down quite effectively.
Right.
But they were very positive, and Jay Rodriguez had a very good game.
All right. No Juan Mata again in this game, an unused substitute, and no shots on goal. Are those two facts connected? Or is that too simplistic?
Still baffling, because I thought we'd heard that Mata had learned the Mourinho way, hadn't we? He'd adapted himself, but he's been out the side for 3.5 weeks. Yeah, to be there, what, player of the season the last couple of years, to be their main match winner and still be out of this side when the other players behind the striker kind of look, I don't know, still as though they're not raw, but they're still kind of, they're not as decisive as Mata. I mean, Mata has been the decisive Chelsea player consistently.
Mm.
And for him to be out of the team and them to be inconsistent, I think is not a coincidence.
And so often this season, when he has come in, he does seem to have made the difference. It's surprising that he wasn't even, the mood didn't even resort to him in this game.
Well, what's really confusing is the reason we've all been given for Mata being out is that he's too slow in transition and that he takes too much time on the ball, which may very well be true. But it doesn't seem to be any worse than the rest of the Chelsea midfield, because they were so ponderous whenever they moved forward. There was hardly any pace there at all. And Basel just pretty much ate them up all day. It was like they were wading through treacle at times. They just couldn't get behind players and cause any kind of damage. So I don't know how slow Juan Mata is in transition, but it must be really, really slow if he's out of this team.
Oh, indeed. I'm just thinking about wading through treacle.
But they've taken about 20 goals and 20 assists out of that team by dropping Mata, so it's perfectly understandable that they are struggling to create chances. It might be slow, but it's a great finisher, great final pass all the time.
Yeah. All right, well, Southampton took 4 points off Chelsea last season. Do you see them nicking something here, or indeed conquering some, even a win at Stamford Bridge?
Yeah, I think I'm long past the point of underestimating Southampton now. They're a very, very good side.
Jose Mourinho might get his special dinner for one. You remember when he was asked about the fact that he nearly lost his home record against, I think it was the West Brom game, he said, no, but I can't do that. Sorry. He said it wasn't a problem. It wouldn't be a problem the day that he loses his home record, because he's going to celebrate what an incredible achievement it was to have had such a great home record, and he'll go and have a nice dinner.
I wonder what it'll be.
I don't know.
Nando's?
I'm not going with Nando's on this one. No. Nice though Nando's are. Perhaps he'll enjoy a Jaffa cake. Right. That's it for part one. Coming up very shortly, we talk Arsenal.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to The Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES. That's TALES. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Right, some pretty special people were in the crowd at the Emirates on Tuesday night. Joey Barton, and indeed, it was a kind of BT Sport. I don't know if people didn't really, but to two alumni of Sunday Night Football, Joey Barton and yourself, James.
Yeah, we weren't together.
Were you not?
No.
He was in with the Marseille fans, keeping it real.
Yeah, I was working.
Oh, yeah. All right.
But it was very impressive again from Arsenal in that they blitzed their opponents. I think their ability to get in the front foot in these Champions League games, against Napoli and against Marseille, has been quite impressive. Because as we saw when Spurs played City, most people's game plan goes completely out the window when they concede an early goal. And I think, Marseille were terrible. and that's a polite way of putting it. I mean, it was an experimental side because they play Lille. Is it Montpellier on Friday? And so Elie Bopp, who looked like an out-of-work ski instructor in this kind of terrible blue, all-blue outfit, he rested Valbuena, he rested Florian Thauvin.
Is it the kind of outfit that henchmen traditionally wear in James Bond films, when you get the climactic battle in the super tanker?
He's being chased on skis.
Or skis.
Exactly, yeah. on Her Majesty's Secret Service. For Your Eyes Only, that was that.
Okay, there's another one involving skis.
Yeah, okay. even the young players that they had didn't offer much.
Right.
But Wilshere was excellent. I thought he was very good against Southampton as well.
He played in a few positions against Southampton as well.
Yeah.
I was surprised he played against Marseille because he played the full game on the weekend, and then you would have maybe expected Wenger to try and protect him a little bit, but seems to be getting stronger.
And he should have scored against Southampton at the weekend. He hit the post with a lovely kind of dinked lob. He scored a great goal early on against Marseille, and Wenger was saying, He's kind of saying to himself, whatever Ramsey can do, I can do as well. And that's sort of, you know, he's beginning to score goals now, which hasn't been a feature of his
game. So just as Ozil's arrival has sparked Ramsey into life, supposedly, that in turn has had a knock-on effect on Wilshere. It's quite remarkable what that level of daring and daring do is beginning to bring to Arsenal's midfield. They're going to be at Cardiff. Homecoming for Aaron Ramsey this weekend. Yes, they are.
It's going to be a hard game.
Arsenal are all conquering at the moment, but Cardiff equally, just held Man United.
Not an easy place to go to, Cardiff. Very high tempo, they in your face, but they can attack as well. So yeah, they wouldn't be surprised if they were to drop something, but Arsenal do look so strong at the moment and confident that equally you'd have to make them heavy favourites to win that match.
Really? Yeah,
I don't think a draw is a particularly bad result at Cardiff. I don't know how Mackay's doing it in the face of all the crazy, but I was really impressed with him on Sunday. As Jacob said, very determined, very organised, very physical. I don't think they'll have any problems as long as they don't sack Mackay.
Well, it's interesting on the week. You'd expect Cardiff to be very proactive on set pieces when they attacking set pieces, but Southampton obviously have James Ward-Prowse, who very good delivery. He's been likened to David Beckham with his right foot and everything. But not by me, by other people.
Right.
But Chesney on the weekend was really, really positive at getting in amongst the bodies and punching away and coming out and catching. So yeah, that seems to be another area where Arsenal are improving.
All right. Well, they are in the meantime in the Champions League and still not sure of going through, even though they're on 12 points. Quite remarkable this.
Yeah.
And you could end up with three teams on 12 points in that. In that Champions League group, although the fact that they've got a two-goal cushion away to Napoli.
Napoli needs to win 3-0.
3-0, or 4-1, would that work?
Napoli need to win by 3 goals.
By 3 goals, yeah.
Not to go through, but because if Dortmund don't win, and Napoli win, then Napoli would go above them anyway, just on points. But because of that third goal that Dortmund scored.
Right, so Marseille have lost all their Champions League games in I don't know how long, and they're playing Dortmund.
At home, yeah.
At home,
yeah.
Right. So, but if Dortmund don't lose that game...
If Dortmund win, then Napoli need to win 3-0 or whatever.
Right. This is my brain working in real time.
Yeah. Marseille want to avoid becoming the first French team ever in Champions League group stage history to not record a single point.
And the weird thing is...
So that's what they're playing for. They're playing for this point.
Marseille were the second seed in that group. Mm. That's how accurate UEFA's coefficients are. They were supposed to be second best team there.
I watched the Dortmund match. It was very, very entertaining.
Right.
Yeah, against Napoli.
Would you say that Napoli actually had a lot of that game? It was regarded as a... In fact, here's Wednesday's Gazzetta dello Sport, who call it a un furto, a robbery. They regarded as that opening penalty as
that was one of those classic ones that Italian defences usually get away with. You think back to Inter against Chelsea in 2010 and Juve last season. But obviously the guy got penalised for it and they were incandescent. They could not believe it. He got booked as well, which was pretty harsh. Probably was a penalty. Royce scores. Yeah, they did have a bit of a... Callejon hit the post and... Dortmund, who had their entire back four out, looked a little bit ropey when they were going forward, but equally Mkhitaryan and Royce were incredible. Lewandowski misses a lot of chances for
someone who's
regarded so highly, and he missed a really bad one at 1-0, but yeah, Dortmund looked like they had their mojo back, especially
Napoli
on the counter-attack. Especially on the counter-attack.
Yeah. Napoli's away record terrible. They've lost 6 of their last 8 away games. Of course, they will be at home to Arsenal next time. We'll talk more about that later on. But given the way Arsenal took them apart at the Emirates, you wouldn't fancy their chances too much of making it out of the group. Juve, meanwhile, bounced from 4th up to 2nd place by finally winning a Champions League game, 3-1 against Copenhagen. Arturo Vidal, what a header, James. What a header.
Yeah, what a cross from Paul Pogba
as well.
That's
true as well, yeah.
Mm. But yeah, his first hat-trick, the first Juventus hat-trick in the Champions League since Pippo Inzaghi.
There you go.
In 2000.
Pippo Inzaghi, who had a notable win this week with his Milan youth team.
Did he?
Yeah, they beat Celtic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're second in the group behind Barcelona. And, of course, the seniors also beat Celtic on Tuesday?
Yeah.
3-0. Oh, dearie me, Celtic. The Italians were stunned to have scored twice from a corner. I think that's probably the first time ever.
The defending wasn't up to much by Celtic. I mean, the pundits were wading in with, it's zonal marking's fault, when it wasn't. It was the players' fault for not doing any kind of marking at all. They all just stood still and let it happen around them. So not a great day for zonal marking.
Great day for Kaká, though.
Yes, so I gather. I didn't see the game.
No,
yeah, saw the
he
goals
has been
see.
Very good since he's been back. I mean, apart from when he got injured against Torino and it was like, oh, same old crocked Kaká. When he has played, I think against Lazio, he scored an excellent goal. Yeah, he's been the one player who's showed up for them. It's been kind of, you know, Kaká versus the rest rather than Milan. And, you know, I think that's quite surprising. I think, you know, a lot of people don't expect him to reach the level he did 2003, 2007, but he's still a quality player.
Yeah, in that side, he certainly still stands out. Mm. And Milan hoping they can push on, this is going to be a turning point for them. They're still far from certain of going through, because I think they're 1 point ahead of Ajax. Of course, all sorts of players coming back from injury now for Milan. But is Philippe Mexès among them, or is his eye problem continuing, James?
Well, we don't know. Apparently, he's been overdoing it on the tanning bed.
What?
Tutor Sport had this story yesterday where he, because it's, you know, been getting cold, grey, foggy in Milan at this time of year, he's been losing his tan. So he's been hitting the salon, and his eye has been overexposed to the bulbs in the tanning bed. He's having to, you know, I mean, he plays like he's got one eye open most of the time. So.
Right.
There you go.
That's one of the all-time great injuries.
Yeah.
It's a Hall of Famer.
It is. Yeah.
What are you putting that in alongside? You've got Salah-Cream.
Salah-Cream's always tendonitis, wasn't it? David James from playing too much.
PlayStation. Yeah. Who was the fellow? Was it Leroy Lita who sprained his leg before getting out of bed? He did his hamstring lying in bed in the morning.
There was someone who
Faustino Sprilia kicking the headlights on a
there was
bus.
Someone on a pre-season tour who I think it was a Croatian player whose his name escapes me. He's a striker and he was good on Championship Manager, so you might be able to remember them. It's always available as a free transfer, but they were at an airport and they were going on a pre-season tour, and I think that he got hit in the eye by his passport or someone else's passport and had to go home. It's in an old knowledge somewhere.
Broadfoot, the Scottish defender.
The exploding
Kirk.
Yeah, we discussed this. This sparked an entire poached egg debate on the
part
which ran. I believe this is where it came from.
Yeah, don't do it in the microwave. Yeah, is the lesson, because you open the door and it explodes in your face.
Yeah, and it exploded in his face like a sperm whale beached.
I saw that. That was horrifying.
James,
is Canizares dropping? Was it aftershave on his foot?
I don't know. Anything you drop on your foot is going to hurt. You think it isn't. Sometimes you might even put your foot in the way just to break the object's fall. But,
but
you're more likely
foot.
To break your foot.
Mm.
Yeah, don't do that.
I remember
that.
Mexes' teammate, former teammate, Kevin Sprotain, his muscle injuries were attributed to...
Sex.
Too much sex.
Sex.
Yeah.
That's true. And how about Sebastian Fry, who when he was a young up-and-coming teen goalkeeper, he was at Inter, went out injured for positively ages because back home in France, he dived into a swimming pool with no water in it. Well, there might have been just a little bit, but there wasn't enough water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey. Footballers do the craziest things. They really do. Right. Well, anyway, next up for Milan in the Champions League is a massive game against Ajax, who are now only 1 point behind them in the group because they went and beat Barcelona. Rave reviews for Ajax after this one, and quite the opposite for Barcelona, who looked, well, stale and slow. A lot of people commenting on that. But De Boer saying it wasn't that Barcelona lacked intensity. We were very good. And, well, terrific.
Really unlucky, because if they hadn't had that awful penalty against them, Milan, then they would be in second place.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's going to be a really spirited game. Well, elsewhere in the Champions League, Real Madrid went down to 10 men, but still beat Galatasaray in front of 45,000 people wearing Cristiano Ronaldo masks. And Gareth Bale on the score sheet again. Some loved his free kick. Jacob, you were unhappy with the goalkeeping.
Well, no, it was one of those wobbly free kicks that that you get with
one of those superb dipping strikes.
No, it's in that you get with the new balls, but it was quite close to it was, you know, obviously I can't do that,
right?
So it was a good shot by Bale, but it was quite close.
But
to
quietly, Bale is really having an impact on
he's
that. He's
got team, six
right?
in 12 games, is it something like that? Which, right. considering he was hurt when he joined, is pretty good.
So was Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's maybe why they were wearing all those masks.
Right, you know, perhaps so. Okay, elsewhere, Paris Saint-Germain are definitely through to the knockout round after beating Olympiacos. That was quite a close game, though. Ibra and Cavani, just for a change, the scorers there. Shakhtar have moved past Leverkusen into second place in Man United's group with their 4-0 win over Real Sociedad. And Benfica are back in the mix. They're now level with Olympiacos in PSG's group after beating Anderlecht in Brussels. That was a big win. And we mentioned about Bayern winning their 10th straight game. 10 in a row. Yikes.
It was an excellent own goal in the Zenit match. Did you see that? Zenit were doing absolutely nothing. They were losing 1-0 to Atletico Madrid. And then they went down the right flank.
Oh, yeah. Courtois.
Yeah. I don't know what he was doing, but he seemed to think that it wasn't going to go in. The ball as it looped up. And then had this moment, this realisation, horror moment where it suddenly dropped into the top corner.
Right.
Speaking
of random goals, how about Goetze's on the frozen pitch away in Moscow?
It was nice. I liked it, the way he drifted inside and then cut across. Douglas Costa's goal for Shakhtar was from quite an acute angle. Fierce shot. I think you've got a word for that, haven't you, Ian?
A thunder bastard.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Super. All right, well, that's enough of part two. We'll be back in a second or two with a look forward to the Premier League weekend.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Right, part three, everybody. All sorts of excitement. Here's Tom Ooh, who says, I cannot believe that the Midlands Derby was not mentioned once in this week's pod. Guys, seriously, poor form, Jimbo et al. It wasn't played until Monday night. And there's not that much point in us previewing it because the show doesn't go out until Monday evening and the game's being played, and then there's no point. For the same reason, we don't really mention the Europa League, which Tom's also questioning about. Anyway, but it was a terrific game. A great comeback by the comeback kings, Aston Villa.
Yeah, three-man substitution.
Yeah.
That always goes wrong. That never has that kind of result.
But does not it? This time.
No, when usually does it? It usually comes off, doesn't it?
Well, I always remember the game against Newcastle, I think in the FA Cup. Ah. It might have been Graham Souness's Newcastle, where he made three subs and then immediately a man was injured, which tends to be the thing. It just invites an injury when you use all
great goals from Long, though.
Yeah, Shane Long.
Bergkamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What a that bet. Touch to you know, not only take the ball down, but also bring it back across his body.
Yeah, I was at Stamford Bridge for the Chelsea-West Brom game,
right.
and Long absolutely monstered John Terry. He gave him a real hard time.
That must have been difficult to watch. And he's scoring goals for Ireland as well.
And he's out of contract this year, I think.
No.
Yeah. He wants to go as well on the last day of the transfer Hull. Window to Hull.
Yeah. Guest producer Pete controversially suggests he looks like you, Jacob.
I've heard that before.
Have you?
Yeah.
That you look like Shane Long?
Do you have as good a touch as Long?
With my left foot, yeah.
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 There you go.
Same tenacious, eager work rate I've noticed as well. Just bustling. Mm. Constantly bustling.
Yeah.
Touching Long.
But was he always this good and people just didn't realise? Or is he really hitting some kind of elevated level of form right now?
He's always done it in sort of fits and starts. He had a very good start at West Brom where he scored in their first two games, and when he came, they were against United and Chelsea, and he scored in those games. He's probably someone who does need a bit of space to run into because he is so quick, but doesn't have loads of subtlety to his game, so struggles maybe against a deeper defence. But he's a great finisher and good in the air.
Do you know how much he cost when Reading bought him a few years ago?
Oh, was it a tracksuit?
No.
That was Kevin Doyle, wasn't it?
Different question.
Right.
No, it was just £10,000.
Was that all?
£10,000.
Didn't they? Reading picked him and Kevin Doyle up back in very much the day.
Was it from Cork?
I think it was Cork. As well.
Oh, really? Right, okay. Yeah. And I think one of the players had tracksuits in their past. It might have been the deal that took them to Cork, and it probably wasn't Shane Long at all. But it's a great story.
Mm.
Anyway, he's going to be doing his Shane Long thing up at St James's Park. Now, with Newcastle, three wins on the bounce. They're in form as well.
Yeah, well, Newcastle have good players, but they finally worked out a way that they should be set up, and that appears not to involve Papis Cisse, who I remember when he scored that goal against Chelsea last year, and then they had played against City a couple of days later, and Rob Smythe, big United fan, was saying, I think that he might just be rubbish.
Mm.
And obviously no one was allowed to say that at that point, and it turns out that maybe there's not a lot to his game, and Remy is a much better footballer than him, who can score basically every week.
I've seen...
It also does involve Ben Arthur, the team.
Right.
and it does involve Shola Amiobi.
Yeah,
playing very well.
I'd seen Papu Cisse in Germany just a couple of times, and there's really nothing to his game apart from the fact that he puts the ball in the net. He's just a goal muncher. That's it. There's nothing else.
But Remy though has so much to his game, and great. They're one signing, but a great signing.
Mm. Well, that should be a keenly contested match then.
West Brom being good away from home.
Yeah,
had some good results.
The derby parallels continue because after facing each other on Monday night, while West Brom are at Newcastle, Aston Villa are also taking on North Eastern opponents, but at home, because Sunderland are visiting Villa Park, where they lost 6-1 last season. Jacob,
they did. Benteke scored a hat trick, and Villa scored a brilliant counter attack goal from Wyman, breaking pass from Matt Loughton. They played very well that night, and I think Villa had a player sent off. Why are you looking at me weird?
It's astonishing recall.
I did the game. I remember everything.
What were you wearing?
I don't know.
What did you eat that day?
Chicken. I went for a drink with Rob Smythe and Greg Bukowski before the game.
Right.
Yep.
What level of your life, say a year ago, can you recall accurately?
I went through a period of being able to tell someone what I did every weekend for about a year.
Right, were you always doing the same thing?
Yeah, going to West Ham.
Oh, right. Yeah. not sure that counts.
No, right. I was I can, my dad's the same, he can remember.
Really?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. You're a bad person to owe money to, aren't you?
Yep, James.
Good. I tell you what, it's all right though, Sunderland. Wes Brown is okay.
Wes Brown is back after a ridiculous decision, but they have been awful away from home. They've done well at the Stadium of Light under Gus Poyet, but it's been win-loss.
Yep. Right. Okay, are the games this weekend include Everton taking on Stoke? Stoke had a win last weekend against Sunderland. We didn't give Everton enough love on Monday. A lot of people pointed this out. I think it's fair. We talked about the derby, and it was pretty much all about Morales' lunge on Suarez and Liverpool's free kicks and that kind of thing. But Everton, a fine performance. And Lukaku scoring two goals in a Merseyside derby.
Lukaku's looking outstanding, isn't he? For ages, there's been this comparison with Drogba. But I think he's going to be better than Drogba.
Really?
I think he's...
Big shout.
I know, I'm making it on record so that in 5 or 6 years' time you all come back and you'll remember. I think he looks absolutely unbelievable. I don't think he's got any weak spots at all.
Really?
That's how much I like him.
I think he drifts in and out of games a little bit, and I think he sometimes rates his own skill a bit too highly. He sometimes gets the ball stuck under his feet, and the final pass can be a little bit lacking. So I kind of understand why he's on loan at Everton. And the Chelsea fan was saying to me last night, all this stuff about Chelsea should be really upset that he's gone off and he's scoring goals. Why would they be upset? He's still their player and he's getting better in a less pressurised environment.
Because they could do with somebody scoring goals for them often.
Yeah, but it's different to score goals for Everton and West Brom than it is for Chelsea.
Where apparently so.
It is.
Why?
Well, you look at someone
should be
like,
easier, though, if you're playing in front of Oscar and
well, look
perhaps
at someone like Ashley Young at United. He was great at Villa.
Yeah.
And then when you go to a club like United, you have to be performing like 9 out of 10 every single week. And there's just more of a spotlight on you. And some players can't handle that.
Right.
And they're more suited to...
So for some players, the bigger stage is the difficulty.
Yeah. But or not so much the bigger stage, but having to perform on that bigger stage all the time.
Right.
Which is what you need to do at those clubs. And Lukaku's, 20, 21?
Hmm.
He's still got a lot of weaknesses to his game that...
I can certainly take the point that there are positives to be taken from this, but it'd be a much better argument, I think, if Demba Ba, Fernando Torres and Samuel Eto'o had scored more goals between them.
Yeah.
If they were doing fine, then I think you could look at it and say it's great for Chelsea. But at the moment, and he does drift in and out of games, and he does have the occasional poor touch, which is kind of understandable for where he is in his development. But by Christ, when he drifts into a game, the game knows about it.
I think when he came on against Bayern, I think that was maybe what convinced Mourinho to let him, that he wasn't quite ready yet, because he wasn't great when in the Super Cup when he came on in that match and did miss that penalty. So I think he just sort not quite there for Chelsea yet.
Liverpool meantime are going to be at Hull. Sturridge and Swage have 18 league goals between them. I'm not sure now, but I think I'm right in saying that they are joint second highest scorers in the Premier League. You've got Aguero top with
10, I think.
10. And then 9 each for Suarez and Sturridge. Pow.
I think Arsenal have four players who are joint second in the assist.
Well, they would, wouldn't they?
Like, you know,
yeah. They probably all on the same goal as well. Mm. Right. Okay, and there's some spirited fixtures, clashes down at the bottom. Norwich are taking on Crystal Palace. Norwich, who are only just above the relegation zone, and Palace, who are now only 3 points from safety, and welcoming cheery old Tony Pulis to the bench.
Yeah,
this
they
weekend.
Won their first game since the end of August, finally, which was a nice going away present for Keith Millen as well.
Am I right in saying that they have had, is it three clean sheets on the bounce, Palace? Certainly two. Because they held Everton goalless and then they won this one.
And they were the first two clean sheets of the league season.
Okay.
They conceded in every other game.
Right. Well, is it just a little thing, or is there something big developing there for Palace?
We'll see how quickly Tony Pulis settles. I mean, right. You know, much has been made of his obvious strengths and the way he likes to play the game. If he could find players in that Crystal Palace side who are capable of it.
Mm. Does he have a man to lump the ball up to? Because I'm not sure Shamak really...
Well, Shamak was... I always say this and people always laugh, but for Bordeaux, he was actually quite good.
Right.
He was, you know, a little bit spindly for a target man.
Gervinho was very good for Lille. And, you know,
absolutely,
gone back, you know.
And is good for Roma. Mm. So it's possible. The only thing with Shamak is I don't think he's very brave.
Right.
And it's a terrible thing to say about someone on a public podcast, but he doesn't.
Well, I'm not.
It's interesting because his main quality at Bordeaux, which persuaded Arsenal to buy him, was his heading ability. He scored more headed goals in the Champions League in the 2 years he was at Bordeaux than any other player in Europe. So you'd think when you're going in for headed. You know, when you're going for headers, you have to. A requisite is bravery, no? He seems to have lost that, though.
Yes. Yeah. But, but he had a nice touch. He had a good eye around him. He could bring other people in. When Arsenal signed him, I thought it was a brilliant signing. I don't know why people still employ me.
Now. Say something nice, Jacob.
I like your jumper.
Thanks, man.
You're great, Ian. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Bubble wrap.
Bubble wrap.
There you go.
Yeah. Let's see. Anyway, what do we decide about Norwich Palace in the end?
Norwich are playing badly, apart from the West Ham game where they were gifted a win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Palace haven't really been stuffed at any point this season. Mm. So there is a bit of spirit there. And Pulis... He has never been relegated.
All right. And what about then? Let's conclude with the Hammers, who in a reenactment of the 1976 FA Cup
75.
Final. Was it 75?
Yeah.
Gosh. What were you doing that day, Jacob? You probably weren't born.
No, I wasn't born.
My parents were getting married that day.
Really?
On that day. There's how to make yourself popular, because they're from Essex.
Right.
And the Essex side nearest to London. And they got married on FA Cup final day, West Ham Fulham.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right, but when they booked
did anyone
the church,
go?
So an awful lot of people snuck out into the car park, right. Probably to listen to the game on their Ford Cortinas.
Yeah, the radios.
Yeah,
because in those days you didn't have listeners. This is remarkable. You didn't have any kind of mobile
device
for even, you know. Well, I suppose you had trannies, didn't you? Transistor radios.
Was there Sky Go or no?
Yeah. No? But anyway, West Ham Fulham.
Yeah, the football.
West Ham Fulham. I'm not sure what to make of this. Two teams very much in crisis.
Yes, two teams. Well, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, crisis, yes, even though it's November crisis. Mm. It has been pretty appalling for West Ham, and the game against Chelsea was particularly worrying, not so much because you expect Chelsea to beat a side like West Ham every single time they play them in 3-0. Okay, fine. They have £30 million Brazilian internationals playing them. So on and so forth, but it was just the way that there was no real belief, and Allardyce said afterwards the players looked shot on confidence, and especially after they make the stupid error for the penalty.
Mm.
I tweeted during the game when Allardyce made those two substitutions and the fans were singing, "You don't know what you're doing." Well, he does know what he's doing, but they have made mistakes, and a load of fans coming back and saying,
"That doesn't
well,
scan nearly so well, though."
No. But what I mean is that he's got promoted in his first season. Then they finished 10th, so you don't just panic at the first sign of trouble and say he's got to go, because there are so many managers who are going to have bad times, and three teams have to go down at some point. It doesn't all mean because they're rubbish managers. And,
yeah.
And
it's not so much about changing a manager, it's more about finding a striker.
The problem they had in the summer was that they bought Andy Carroll.
Yeah.
They knew he was injured, but they didn't think it was going to take this long, and no one knows. There's a suggestion he might start running again in the next couple of days, who knows. he's in Amsterdam at the moment. He was at the Ajax Barcelona game, funnily enough, watching that. And so he's not going to be involved on Saturday. Modibo Maiga missed a sitter on the weekend. He's no good at the moment. Carlton Cole, they said they weren't going to sign him until he was fit. Then they do sign him, and he's not played at all. And he's still persisting with this strikerless formation, and Kevin Nolan playing up front that completely negates him.
I'm just struggling to think of a striker who is worse than Modibo Maiga, or who has been worse in the Premier League since the League's inception.
Really?
I've got
worst
nothing.
Striker ever in the Premier League.
You're really, really bad. Really. Yeah, but Schmeck has at least scored.
The thing with Maiga is I don't actually know what it is he's meant to be.
No.
It might just be that he's in the wrong team, because he did score in France. But
right, is it a common theme here? Is it players score in France?
Yeah, well, it's a weaker league, isn't it? But but spending the last bit of cash that was available on Stuart Downing has turned out not to be a good idea, and they're going to have to find a way until January when they're going to have to sign a striker.
Still, Fulham,
yes, another bad side.
Yeah.
And not maybe the bravest away from home. Ooh. But they do have strikers.
We're calling people out on their moral fibre in today's...
This is a hard-hitting show.
Yeah. Well, I think that's...
Good thing we're not doing cricket. Yeah. We'd rip into pieces.
Well, Fulham aren't exactly noted for their gutsiness on the road, are they?
Are they not?
No.
Plus, Berbatov was captain. You know, I mean, giving the armband to him at the stage this season was, you know... surprising. You could say he's a technical leader, you know, in terms of what he does, but in terms of someone shouting and organising, probably not leading by example in his commitment.
Martin Yol said recently he doesn't say a lot.
No.
When he does, I bet it's great though.
Yeah.
Just like a little anecdote, a little gag, something gorgeous.
But he's a lovely
silent football. For 3 weeks.
It'd be nice to have him up front for West Ham.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, in another life, Jacob.
Yeah.
Now, that's it then for today's Football Weekly Extra. We'll be back on Monday. Looking forward to what's a massive midweek round of games. So do make sure you join us for that. In the meantime, many thanks to Jacob, guest producer Pete, James Horncastle, and Ian McIntosh. Have a super weekend. Speak to you soon.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.